Hello, this is Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article, Solar Firm Hopes to Revive Plan. Company Tries to Gain Neighbors' Support, by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. As the Danville City Council met at City Hall Tuesday night, Sol Systems representatives met with a few neighbors to talk about resubmitting its solar panel project on Aqua Illinois property. The project failed to receive a majority city council vote, with five aldermen voting for the project and seven voting against it in May of 2019. The project now has a few changes, including a setback increased from 150 feet to keep a minimum 200 feet of wooded buffer. There's also the commitment to 10 feet of additional vegetative buffer. There will be fixed solar panels tilted south, and also a commitment to a 10-foot tall privacy fence behind the vegetative buffer. The fence had been previously proposed at 7 feet. The project would still see the installation of about 7,000 solar panels on land near Aqua Illinois' water treatment plant at 1300 West Fairchild Street in the AG Agriculture Zoning District. Sol Systems LLC said their new special use permit request to allow for the construction of the large ground solar energy system could come before the Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission at its March 5th meeting. The project already had been accepted for a large distribution generation solar energy site in the state's Solar Energy Tax Credit Lottery by the Illinois Power Agency. Sol Systems, out of Washington, D.C., has continued to work with Aqua and evaluate options. Sol Systems officials say this will be a 1.6 megawatt AC project on 8 acres. Neighbors have been against the project due to the aesthetics of seeing the solar panels near their residential area and the effects on property values. Ward 5 Alderman Mike Purr and Tom Stone asked officials to restake the boundaries of the property with flags to show neighbors where it will be. Purr also said neighbors can view the site now with less vegetation on the trees. Aqua Illinois Area Manager Andy Price again said the project will help Aqua avoid raising rates as often. The solar panels are estimated to save Aqua about $4 million in energy savings over 25 years. City officials said the notifications were sent to the neighbors about the Tuesday night meeting. Sol Systems officials said they wanted to talk with neighbors first to get feedback and address lingering concerns before the special use permit again went through the zoning and city council process. At the Danville City Council meeting on Tuesday, the council heard another Report It presentation on the city's new website app for the public to report code enforcement and other issues. Geographic Information System Coordinator Adam All said setting it up in-house saves the city about $11,000 a year from the former app. The council heard from Robinson Street resident Melissa Brandon about neighbor issues, including noise. "We're all dealing with the crime," she said. She wants to see landlords take some responsibility for their properties and renter issues. She also looks forward to video cameras going in neighbors to fight crime. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. also announced the Housing Committee members, with non-voting member Ward 6 Alderman Aaron Troglia. The committee's first meeting is at 2 p.m. on February 12th at City Hall, 17 West Main Street. Now we'll head to the article, Rezoning Request on Panels Agenda. Existing business north of city wants to expand, by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. A rezoning request for a business north of Danville is on the agenda for this month's Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. The commission's meeting at 5:15 p.m. on Thursday at the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building at 17 West Main Street, includes one public hearing. Petitioner Robert Brennan, with Route 1 Store and Lock, is requesting to rezone the property at 15952 Potter's Woods Road from AG Agriculture Zoning to B2 Highway Business Zoning to allow for automobile sales and continuation of current use. The property is within the city's 1.5-mile zoning jurisdiction. I've had a couple against and a couple for the potential rezoning, said Logan Kronk, grants and planning manager for the city, about neighbors' phone calls. Kronk said the individuals also plan to attend Thursday's meeting. According to the zoning packet, the city's Public Works Department recommends denial of the rezoning. Staff understands that the current use is a long-standing existing use and was rezoned to AG by an amendment made to the zoning map in the early 2000s. The business is located 1.4 miles out of corporate limits, and currently, Route 1 Store and Lock cannot expand or change operations due to their existing non-conforming use. The requested rezoning of B2 conforms to current property use, but does not conform to the city's long-term comprehensive plan, nor the existing zoning of adjacent parcels. Based on the information currently available, without the benefit of additional information that may be presented at the public hearing, the Public Works Department recommends a denial of rezoning petition number 275, according to the city staff recommendation. As per a site plan and overview on the request, the parcel has been used as a self-storage facility for almost 30 years. The change would affect a small portion, approximately 500 feet by 500 feet, for the automotive sales, and they say there are no issues from adjoining property owners. We do not believe that there will be any substantial increase in traffic, nor is any additional curb cut being requested. As most of you are aware, adjacent to this parcel was a large lot that had sold trailers, mobile homes, and motorhomes, according to paperwork from the petitioner. Hours of operation for the automobile sales would be 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. On-site parking will be provided in the same area parking spots are set for the storage facility. The petitioner paperwork further states, the request is consistent with the comprehensive plan, as it makes no substantial changes to the current business use of the property, and without expansion of the current parcel. Further, there was a commercial auto sales location directly across Highway 1 before going out of business. Commercial development along this area, specifically directly adjacent to the highway, should be welcomed by the city. The character of the existing neighborhood will be preserved, as no expansion is planned, and the parcel is already used for commercial purposes. There are no concerns with the health or safety of the public from the proposed use, and will have little, if any, impact on the living conditions of adjacent property. Due to the size of the proposed area, there will not be any noticeable traffic or congestion. There are no environmental concerns, as there will be no repair shop and simply have cars parked on the already paved surface. As to the request serving the public, Mr. Brennan would not be putting his own money into this project if he did not believe it would serve the public and make a profit. We would respectfully request that this change in use be granted by committee and forward this on to the full city council for a vote to rezone the area. Now we'll go to the article, Song and Dance, Area Show Choirs to Perform at DHS Event, by Carol Rome, Danville. Danville High School's Dick Van Dyke Auditorium will be filled with song, dance, elaborate costumes, and close-ups of singers projected on two video screens, as the DHS Choral Department plays host to the 24th Annual Midwest Classic this weekend. The two-day show choir competition will gather 27 middle school and high school choral ensembles from across Illinois and Indiana, totaling 1,800 to 2,000 students, to compete at DHS for awards in various categories. It's a little more local this year, but it's still a big full day, choral director Jeff Thomas said. Earlier this week, members of the all-male show choir group, The Executives, rehearsed a song that will be part of their exhibition performance during the competition. The teens practiced finely tuned choreographed dance moves while singing Was Not Was, 1989 hit, Walk the Dinosaur, which will be part of their Jurassic Park themed performance. Thomas tweaked some of the dance moves, as well as how some of the words in the song were sung. "It looks good, but you don't have practice again until Saturday," a concerned Thomas told the group. Darmic Owen, a member of the Executives, was more optimistic. "If we all try our best, I think we'll be good," the DHS sophomore said. In addition to Walk the Dinosaur, the set also includes the Hall & Oates 1982 classic, Maneater, and I'm a Paleontologist by They Might Be Giants from 2009. Darmic added that he liked the Executives' costumes, saying, "We look like archaeologists." Thomas says he expects the event to draw 3,500 spectators to enjoy the entertainment of 8 middle school groups on Friday and 19 high school show choirs, which does not include the exhibition groups from Danville, on Saturday. "We are sold out for the number of school groups we can accommodate," he said. Established in 1997, the Midwest Classic has grown and developed into one of the most respected show choir competitions in the Midwest, and continues to be the largest event held at Danville High School, providing an unmatched performance venue inside the historic Dick Van Dyke Auditorium. The Midwest Classic logo will return and be featured as part of the event's background lighting and emblazoned on the front of t-shirts and hoodies. DHS alum Lauren Davis, who is a sophomore at the University of Kentucky, created the Midwest Classic logo a few years ago. Every year, Davis tweaks the general logo and changes the dates and colors. "It's nice to see alumni come back and still be involved," Thomas said. "I still have a ton of alumni who come back to help." In addition to the logo, all of the participating schools' names will be listed on the back of the Midwest Classic t-shirts and hoodies. Thomas said shirt and hoodie orders will be taken on-site, with the garments being shipped to customers' homes. This year, the Midwest Classic t-shirts and hoodies and logos will be offered in a variety of colored combinations, such as teal and purple, black and white, as well as a pink option and a maroon option. "There are varying options if you want to get creative," he said. Another feature that has been popular in the past will return to this year's event, the coffee house. The coffee house is in its own room where coffee drinks are served in a unique setting. "We're the only ones to have a fully functioning coffee house," Thomas said, referring to the other show choir competition venues. "We turn one of the classrooms into a coffee house. We bring in retro furniture and hang lights from the ceiling," he said. "And we have live acoustic sets performed by community members, alumni, and students. We still have a couple spots open for coffeehouse performances on Friday and Saturday," he added. A new feature at this year's event is the addition of a soloist final competition and awards for the top female soloist and top male soloist. "We saw it at another competition, so we're going to try it," Thomas said. Two soloist competitions will take place both on Friday night and all day Saturday in DHS's Little Theater. The middle school solo competition, with 14 different soloists, will run from 6:30 to 9:50 p.m. on Friday. The high school solo competition, featuring 39 soloists, will run from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday. The top three females and the top three males will go on to the soloist final competition at 9:25 p.m. on Saturday in the auditorium, Thomas said. Although Danville's own show choirs won't compete for awards, Northridge Middle School's Radiant Reds and Redcoats, as well as DHS's Contemporaries, Delegation, and Executive groups, will show off to the hometown audience with their exhibition performances. "We will have two big screens on the sides of the stage where we can zoom in like a rock concert," Thomas said. The middle school division competition will kick off the event at 5:30 p.m. Friday with an exhibition performance from the Radiant Reds from Northridge Middle School at 7:45 p.m., and the Redcoats from Northridge performing at 10:15 p.m. The championship award ceremony will begin at 11 p.m. On Saturday, the high school division competition will begin at 7:15 a.m., with 19 high school show choirs performing throughout the day. The all-male group, the Executives, will perform at 3 p.m. The all-female group, the Contemporaries, will perform at 6:15 p.m. And the mixed show choir, Delegation, will perform at 11:25 p.m. The Contemporaries will perform a show similar to Coraline and Alice in Wonderland. It starts out in black and white, and at the end it is very vibrant and colorful, Thomas said. Delegation's show, Screen Time, is a cautionary tale about the trials and issues of being addicted to technology. The performance is a reminder to put down the cell phone and live in the moment and make meaningful relationships. Their costumes are based on social media icons, Thomas said. The boys will have a Facebook, Snapchat, or YouTube logo on the back of their blazer, and the girls' dresses will match. Preliminary awards will be presented at 6:45 p.m. on Saturday, with the finals competition beginning at 7:25 p.m. and the championship awards being presented at 11:55 p.m. To put on a competition as large as the Midwest Classic, it takes several hundred local volunteers, mostly parents and students, to plan out every detail of the event. We have hundreds of parents, community members, alumni, and students that help, Thomas said. The volunteers help with lighting, sound, parking, shuttle bus driving, ticket sales, merchandise sales, concession stand, and serving food on a food line during the two-day event. It's pretty amazing what we do every year, he said. You have 5,000 people come through the doors with students and spectators, so you have to have many volunteers. We put two students on each school group who give them a tour of our building, Thomas said. They're student leaders who help them navigate the building. Another 150 students run coffee and help the judges, he added. Every year the annual event seems to grow and improve. We start planning for next year the week after this event ends, he said. We're lucky so many people love the music department. Everyone just pulls together. We'll now go to the death notices. Linda M. Reed, 76, of rural Covington, Indiana, died on Saturday, February 1st. Visitation will be 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Friday, February 7th, at West Liberty Church of Christ. Memorial services at 5 p.m. Eastern. Burial will be at Lower Mound Cemetery. Memorials to West Liberty Church of Christ. Randall L. Williamson, 65, of Danville, passed away on January 9, 2020. A Celebration of Life memorial service will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 8th, at Connection Church in Danville. An open house will be 2:30 to 4 p.m. on Saturday at Connection Church. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly requests anyone wishing to offer memorials in Randy's memory to make the contribution to their church or a charity of the donor's choice. Mary Alice Fulconio Nee Reed, 85, formerly of Danville, passed away on February 2nd. A massive Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, February 6th at Holy Family Church in Danville. Visitation from 9 a.m. until time of service at the church. Private burial will be with her husband at Danville National Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Hospice of Southern Illinois or Schlarman High School. Evelyn Woodard, 90, of Oakwood, Illinois, passed away on January 31st. Private family services will be held at a later date. Ronald J. Zimmerman, 70, of Hillsborough, died on Sunday, February 2nd. As per Ron's request, cremation will be accorded and no formal service will take place. Darlene Wren, 84, of Danville, passed away on February 3rd. A celebration of Darlene Wren's life will be at noon on Friday, February 7th at Blurton Funeral Home in Potomac. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon on Friday at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest following the service at Potomac Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. Elise C. Greer, 88, of Fairmount, passed away on January 31st. Funeral services will be noon on Friday, February 7th at New Life Church of Faith in Homer. Burial will be in Davis Cemetery, east of Homer. Visitation from 10 a.m. until service time on Friday at the church. Charles Duckworth, 82, of Danville, died on Monday, February 3rd. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. And now for some news in local sports, we'll head to the article, Short-Handed Blue Devils Roll Past Buffaloes, by Chad Dare, Bismarck. There is no doubt which boys' basketball team is best in the Vermilion County. Bismarck Henning, Rossville Alvin. And the Blue Devils backed up that statement again on Tuesday night with an 80-33 triumph over the Georgetown Ridge Farm Buffaloes in a rematch of the Vermilion County Tournament Championship from January 25th. "We want to continue to prove that we are the best in the county and the best in the conference," said Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin Sr., Kaj Stanford, who had a game-high 20 points for the Blue Devils. Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin has now beaten every county team by at least 20 points, and the Blue Devils' average margin of victory in 10 wins over teams from the county is 31.2 points per game. And Tuesday's win came with three key contributors out with either an injury or illness. Junior Brody Sexton, who was injured in the county title game, is still out. Sophomore forward Mason Hackman has an injured hand, and freshman Brett Meadle was sick. The Blue Devils dressed just 8 players against the Buffaloes, who also were limited to just 8. "We were basically limited to our starting group," said BHRA coach Gary Tidwell. "They did a good job. They came out with a lot of energy, and they established the tempo right away." BHRA did a little more than establish the tempo. The Blue Devils took complete control of the contest, scoring 33 first-quarter points, on its way to a 29-point lead. "We can pressure the ball well," Tidwell said. "We have multiple guys that can do it. It is the same thing about our diversity on the offensive end. We can also guard at every position on the floor." Georgetown Ridge Farm, 14-11 overall, 5-3 in the conference, committed 10 first-quarter turnovers as coach Rob Lorenzen called 3 timeouts in the game's first 8 minutes, trying to stem the tidal wave of pressure that the Blue Devils were applying to his Buffaloes. Senior Drew Reifstick was once again the culprit in the Georgetown Ridge Farm plans. He scored 12 first-quarter points to go along with 4 steals and 3 assists. Reifstick finished with 19 points, 7 assists, and 5 steals. "Drew initiates the whole thing with his ability," Tidwell said, "but I thought we had a really good balance and we were sharing the ball well. The first half was a lot of fun for sure." Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin kept rolling in the game's second 8 minutes. The Blue Devils took out a 56-13 lead into the locker room, as Stanford had 16 points in the first half, as he was a very impressive 7 of 8 from the field. His only miss was a 3-pointer in the final seconds of the half. "Drew is a really good point guard, and he shares the ball well. He can score whenever he wants to, but he also makes sure that everyone else has a role in the offense," Stanford said. "We want to be a winning team, and we are doing whatever we can to win." Stanford admits that all 5 starters and the guys that come off the bench have the ability to play all spots on the floor. "We don't rely on one guy," he said. "If you are not doing well, we have someone else that can come pick it up." That was evident on Tuesday night, as Stanford and Reifstick were joined by senior guard Avery McConkie and junior guard Elijah Tidwell in double figures. McConkie and Tidwell each finished with 13, while all eight players that dressed for the Blue Devils finished with at least 3 points. Junior Cade Howie was the only starter for Bismarck Henning Rossville Albion not to score in double figures, but he had a game-high 9 rebounds to go along with his 6 points. "All of these guys are interchangeable," Tidwell said. "They can all handle the ball, and they can all play on the perimeter. Our ball skills are really solid, and they do a good job of keeping their heads and getting their teammates involved." Tidwell admits that he is looking forward to getting a few guys back, hopefully for this weekend's action against Schlarman Academy on Friday night and Hoopston Area on Saturday night. The Hoopston Area game is a change in the schedule for the schools. It was originally set for February 11th, but Hoopston Area is hosting the girls' regional that night, so the schools moved the game to Saturday. Sophomore Caden Mingy was the leading scorer for the Buffaloes with 10 points, 6 coming in the fourth quarter, while Kale Steinbaugh finished with 8 points and 3 assists. Georgetown Ridge Farm will host Westville on Friday. We'll now go by the staff report. Firefighters battle multiple blazes. Danville. Firefighters found themselves fighting 3 suspicious fires early Tuesday morning. There was no power and no gas to any of the buildings, Fire Captain Aaron Marcotte said, of the vacant structures. Firefighters first responded to 1204 McKinley, where upon arrival they witnessed heavy fire showing at 1:21 a.m. Marcotte said firefighters initially tried to make an entry, but had to back out. While on scene, crews were dispatched to 204 and 209 New York for a pair of fires. No injuries were reported at any of the fires. Firefighters were on scene at the McKinley Fire until 6:48 a.m. and on New York until 7:11 a.m. The buildings on New York have been torn down. The houses were not occupied and were scheduled to be demolished as part of Carl's Medical Center project. There were no damage estimates available yet, but all 3 were total losses. A house at 513 West Madison, just across the street from the New York fires, burned back on September 8, 2019. The cause of that fire is listed as undetermined. The causes of the New York and McKinley fires are also undetermined and remains under investigation. That's about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. As always, thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to the next time we get to read together.